We launched a new report called Feminist Climate Justice, a framework for action on Gender Day at COP28, which is the big global climate negotiations that are taking place right now in Dubai. The reason that we're launching this approach is because there's growing evidence of the linkages between climate change and gender inequality. So I think over the past decades, we've seen, you know, slow, incremental, somewhat fragile progress on gender equality. But now, because of climate change, we're seeing a reversal of that progress and real threats to gender equality and women's rights. And that's because in the context of extreme weather, you know, floods, droughts, and so on, women, particularly in the global south, tend to be much poorer than men. They have less access to resources like jobs and land. And so when extreme weather hits, they're much less able to rebuild and recover. So we're really concerned about that. And so we're calling on governments to make sure that they put gender equality issues at the heart of all of their climate action, their climate financing, and their climate policies.
And in your op-ed, you emphasize the importance of recognizing, redistributing, representing, and repairing to achieve feminist climate justice. Can you provide specific examples of initiatives that align with each of these pillars or any?
Sure. Yeah. So feminist climate justice, we identify four key dimensions, which, you know, provide governments with some guidance on how they can achieve feminist climate justice. The first one is about recognition. So that's really about recognizing women's rights, their knowledge and their labor. And I think the specific example I would give here is the importance of recognizing the knowledge that women at a local level, indigenous women, rural women, the knowledge that they have of their local context and their lives and their livelihoods. Because sometimes when we see, you know, adaptation policies, policies that are designed to help communities to adapt to climate impacts, they don't always take into account local knowledge. And sometimes that actually leads to projects that do more harm than good. On redistribution, as I mentioned before, women tend to be poorer than men. And so redistribution is really about ensuring that as we move to low emission economies, we're going to have to change our economies. And as we move to low emission economies, it's a real opportunity to make sure that women are at the front of the queue for those new green jobs in those new green sectors. And that is a way of addressing the inequalities that women have faced in terms of access to jobs and wage gaps and so on. And then representation is about ensuring that we have women's voices represented in climate decision making from the local level in things like, you know, forestry committees at local level up to national level, ensuring that we have women well represented in parliaments and as ministers in environment ministries, and then ensuring that we have women represented in COP delegations so that they're, you know, at the table when the climate negotiations are happening. And the reason we call for that is because we know that when women are involved in decision making, those decisions are more likely to reflect the reality of women's lives and a diversity of approaches. So the final one is about reparations. And that's really about recognizing that the global north is responsible for the vast majority of historical carbon emissions. And it's women in the global south who've done least to cause the problems that are bearing the brunt of the climate crisis. And so in acknowledging that, we also want to make sure that there's, you know, generous climate finance that's going to where it's needed, to the women and the girls who are at the forefront of the climate crisis. And one of the things that's being negotiated at COP this year is the Loss and Damage Fund. And so it will be really important as member states kind of think about that fund to make sure that women and girls are prioritized for receiving that finance.
And accountability is highlighted as a crucial aspect of the feminist climate justice approach. How can governments and global leaders enhance accountability, particularly in the context of addressing the urgent demands for bold climate action?
Yeah, so this is a real challenge. I think we've seen, you know, women's movements and other social movements demanding action on climate change for a long time now. And there's a real mismatch between those demands and how fast governments are moving. And we know that the climate crisis is really urgent at this point. I mean, the latest UN estimates are that without, you know, a radical change of course, we're heading for 3 degrees of global heating by the end of the century, and that means an increasingly unlivable planet. So we do need much greater accountability for climate action. And I think, women's organizations, social movements, environmental activists have been really kind of on the forefront of this issue in their local communities demanding change. But quite often we see that those activists, they're not rewarded for their activism. They're actually often harassed and, arrested and sometimes even killed. And so we need to see, an end to that kind of violence and an end to that kind of impunity and safe spaces created for that kind of activism.